Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing.
Yes, this is Jamala Rasta, the host of Voices from the Battlefield. And it seems like some of the sentences and the phrases in my intro music are apropos for today's discussion. Stop that fussing and the fighting. It's going to be all right. We're going to do it right. So this is the space and time where we devote to people who are the voices on the battlefield, folks who are fighting for justice, fighting for democracy. And we do it in lots of different ways. And so there's many battlefronts. And so those people who we know are there doing that, we try to lift them up and connect the dots of how these issues are all related. And also try to connect the people who are doing that work so that they know they are not isolated, they are not alone, because we got common enemies that are creating, as we know, havoc, not only in this country, in the world. And the guest that we had on last week, remember, we talked about what's going on in Gaza. And since then, we have somewhat of a peace agreement. Many of us are not quite convinced that it is a real resolution, but the fact that it is conflict and it's been going on also gives context to our conversation today. So we have with us today Wolf Smith, who is the executive director of Conflict Resolution Center of St. Louis, and Jesse DeGraffery III, who is on the board, board president. And in full disclosure, this is one of the boards I was on, and I have all the respect and love in the world for the work that they do. So welcome, Jesse and Wolf.
Thank you so much for having us.
Good morning.
Yeah. I'm glad you could make it, because when I think about what's going on in the world, you all, you know, here in St. Louis, in Missouri, in this country, in the world, it's full of strife and conflict. And one of the things I always note is that people don't always have the tools or the support to resolve that conflict, even when it's interpersonal. And so that is the beauty and power of the Conflict Resolution Center of St. Louis. So let's talk about where did it come from? What was the genesis of it? And then a little bit about what the services are, what you actually do now. But we know conflict is real. Conflict can cause more stress if it goes unresolved. But yeah, and when I think about the way that mediation is used, it's not just on the interpersonal level, because we've seen that same concept be used in truth and reconciliation when there's been huge long-term conflicts with countries and ethnic groups inside of those countries, and they've worked quite well. And so if you know some of the stats of the value of mediation, we could say that because I did do some research, and it's really like 75 to 80% successful. And we need to talk about why that is. So let's talk about, you know, the genesis of CRC and how it came about and what it actually does for our community.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to start. So the Conflict Resolution Center of St. Louis actually was first conceptualized as part of the Forward Through Ferguson Commission's report. So after the murder of Michael Brown, when the commission got together, one of the key things that they explored was ways for communities to resolve conflict more peacefully and without having to rely on an outside authority to come in and adjudicate who's right and who's wrong. So that became the impetus for the very beginning of our work. So Conflict Resolution was founded in 2017, or the center was founded in 2017 by John Doggett, Jane Davis, Mary Wheeler and Joanne Williams. So these were different leaders from the St. Louis community who were all really passionate about creating a place for community members to just have dialogue with each other and to just talk it out rather than fight it out. So that really was the impetus. So we use volunteers for those community-based mediations. We help folks have conversations. We provide what we call conflict coaching, which are individual sessions. And I know that we'll talk more about each of these, but we have four kind of main types of programs we work on. The first one is community type cases. So that's a fight you have with your neighbor, right? Or your neighborhood association. But it also includes if you have a nonviolent interaction with an officer that's negative, or any first responder that's negative, we can help have a conversation between the person who has been harmed and that first responder to just kind of talk about how it made them feel. So that's what we call our community cases. We do housing work, so we help landlords and tenants have conversations about rent, repairs, lease conditions, all that kind of good stuff, right? And the goal of that is if we're able to have these conversations, then we can prevent the eviction from moving forward. We do a lot of workplace mediations. I don't know about you, but every workplace has conflict, and that conflict is not always smooth. And so we're there to help that in that situation. And last but not least, we train young people on how to resolve conflict. Whenever I was in school, I know I had a lot of conflict and I didn't know how to deal with it, right? And young people right now, especially, they're coming up on the tails of really conflict-intensive times with COVID, with our current political climate. And it can be really overwhelming. And so we train folks, how do you resolve conflict? And then we train the young people also how to help their friends resolve conflict. So just kind
And we'll add social media to what young people have to deal with when they're trying to resolve conflict. So that's something new that our generation didn't even have to deal with.
Exactly. It's so easy to go online and blast someone, right? Like you put all your business out there and then you let the court of public opinion decide who's right and who's wrong. But that doesn't actually make anyone feel better. Usually both people just feel worse, right?
Yeah. You want to add to that, Jesse?
Well, now, one of the biggest things, especially when you talk about social media, and the youth today, like you said, there was something we didn't really have to deal with that. And what you find is nowadays, not just children, but you even have an increase in adults who normally would not say something that they would say face to face, but they'll go online and just really just go all out. And when you talk about bullying, it's not just children, it's adult as well. And, one of the biggest thing really that conflict resolution, it's about teaching people how to deal with conflict and how to deal with those emotion and just having that difficult conversation.
Yeah. So, just in terms of a conflict mediation, if you could just explain with that, because I think most people say, "Oh, I don't think I'm going to get results because that person doesn't listen." It actually takes both parties agreeing to the process for it to be successful. So you can't make somebody do mediation who doesn't want to. So talk a little bit about what the process looks like. If I'm somebody and I'm having problems with my HOA or my tenants association, because I don't think they're doing what they're supposed to, and they agree to a mediation, what would that look like?
Yeah, so Jesse actually is a well-known mediator, one of our volunteer mediators. So I'm gonna let him talk a little bit about what mediation actually looks like and why it can be so impactful in these situations.
Well, really what the process looks like is when neighbors and people are having difficulties, they reach out to a mediator. And a mediator is someone who facilitate. They're an individual who is trained in mediation that helps people come together and have those difficult conversations, But really, the mediator is neutral in the whole process. They don't take sides. They're not there to act as a judge because mediators are not judge. Mediators are individuals that come that brings people together to just help them discuss the conflict that they were having. And so kind of what that looks like is you have two people that will come together and they will sit in a safe space. and the mediator will help them generate options in reference to solving their issues. And what's so good about mediation, this is why I love mediation. It's different from court. Mediation is not like court, where court, you take an issue to a judge and a judge will solve that issue for you. The reason mediation is so successful is because in the mediation process, the individual parties come up with their agreement, right? So they have a say in the terms that are written in their agreement. And there's a lot of data out there that will actually show that individuals that come up with their own agreement tends to hold better, and it tends actually to work out better than it would if they went to court, right? Because a lot of time when they go to court, people are still a little bit upset after, a court case because of the time, the money that is spent. But a mediator will help people in rephrasing and reframing certain words, so we kind of keep the calm nature. What I always think when I think about a mediator is think about a boat, right? And a boat is in the sea and it's rocking back and forth, right? And so the mediator is that anchor. The mediator is what grounds the boat, that keeps it from rocking back and forth in the sea. And so as long as the mediator is grounded, then the conversation in that boat is grounded. And so that mediator's job is to help both individuals see each other. It allows them to hear each other, see each other, and get them to talk in a way that they don't have to agree, but they it's best for them to understand and at least put their self in the other person's shoe. And that's really what the process is all about. It's about bringing people together, having them seen and having them heard. And that's kind of the whole basis of the process. But the parties are the ones that come up actually with their own solution.
Yeah, and I think the part that always rings true with me is the heard part, because when people can't communicate, you can't even get to resolution. You don't even think the person's hearing what you're saying and how you're feeling. So all it is becomes a shouting match or no communication at all. And so to me, that's the what for me the important part of mediation is, like, there is an ability for you to be heard, whereas other situations you won't be heard. And I also would say, as you were talking, Jesse, it reminded me of most indigenous cultures have some kind of mediator, because you need sometimes that third party that is objective and neutral to say, okay, let me hear both sides. And then even sometimes as people are talking, they're even working out themselves, like, oh, I can see where I messed up. Oh, no wonder he misunderstood what I said. Okay, now I'm here. So just being able to just get it out there. And I'm thinking about, for example, during COVID, when people were shut down, and the whole notion of tenants having issues with their landlords, that's and I was on the board at that point, and we saw the numbers of cases, and they just ballooned. So talk a little bit about just having a agency like this that could hear all of those things. Who would have thought that we would have a COVID situation, let alone all of the conflict that came from COVID? But here you are, you can't get out, you can't pay money, you can't do this. And the landlords have issues too, especially the smaller ones. I'm not talking about the big corporate ones, but if I got a two-family flat and you're saying you can't pay rent, I still have bills to pay. So talk a bit about what that looked like, so people can get a sense of how those came to you all and how some of them got resolved.
Yeah, I think that's a great question for our ED. Our executive director, Wolf Smith, drove that train, and I will tell you, Wolf and his staff did an excellent job during that time. So that's something that Wolf can speak upon.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, you're absolutely right, Jamala. The sheer amount of people who were struggling at the height of the pandemic in 2020 and 2021 was it was just incredible, right? And every person I know was impacted in a different way. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people were at risk of losing their homes. People were sick for weeks at a time. I still have friends who are suffering from what they call long COVID, right? What we learned early on is that the public policy approach to housing was to just stop the evictions. But what that ended up hurting the most was number one, tenants, because it did not stop them from owing rent. It just delayed their rent. And then two, exactly like you mentioned, small landlords. A lot of these are people where their grandparents passed away and left them, a home or a condo. And they were like, you know what? I'm going to rent it out in order to continue to pay the mortgage and taxes on it. And then when my children grow up, they're going to have a starter home that they can move into. And the banks did not have the same prohibitions on foreclosures. So you had these small landlords who were renting out a family home, and tenants weren't required to pay. Many of them lost their jobs, right? So it ended up in this really vicious cycle where the courts are saying there's nothing we can do. Tenants are continuing to accrue rent, but they're not getting enough. They're not really getting any tools around what to do when the moratorium lifts. And then there's landlords who are struggling, like you mentioned, to pay their mortgage. So having a conversation with all the parties involved, we were able to, in about 95% of cases, we were able to get parties to reach an agreement. And those agreements almost always included some form of rental assistance combined with a tenant repayment plan to get them back on track. And exactly like Jesse mentioned, when folks are a part of building the solution, they're more likely to make it happen. So in that first year alone, we conducted, I want to say it was 900 mediations, which was like, it was just an
For a
obscene.
small agency like this, it was like, woo!
We had, at the time we started with two staff. We ended up with, I think, seven at the time. So, that was over 100 apiece. And that's a lot of cases, right? So yeah, and we were able to get folks we were able to get folks in scheduled and agreements completed and rental assistance applied for all within about a month, which was about three times as fast as most other people were processing applications. So that was like the most intense time in my history here. We do still provide that service, and we continue to emphasize small landlords for very similar reasons. A lot of times, small landlords are the ones who are most willing to be flexible, who are the most willing to work with their tenant. But then, when the tenant stops responding to them, it becomes personal, right? Like, I've trusted you. We've been in this relationship for 10 years. We've had a really good conversation, and then you just ghost me. And no one likes to be ghosted, right? And so we're able to help them have that conversation. And we continue to have a really high agreement rate. It's anywhere from 80 to 85% of the time. If we can get both parties to sit down and have that conversation, they reach an agreement. And in 90% of those cases, the agreement is either met or on track about a month and a half later, which is really, in a normal eviction, folks only get 10 days before the sheriff forcefully, removes them. So just thinking about that time that people have, the ability to get folks back on track, to get that eviction prevented, is one of the things that I can say I'm definitely most proud of that. And just keeping people housed, because if someone's not housed, how are they supposed to manage the other aspects of their lives?
Very much so.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that really brought it home, the power of CRC, Conflict Resolution Center, because I don't think the need had been that great before. There was individual kind of stuff that was happening between neighbors or whatever, but when that happened and we had to go to scale, we got a chance to see the impact that we could have. One of the things that we have not mentioned is that some of the funding for Conflict Resolution Center comes from the city. And so what that does is open it up that city employees could use and all these services are free. That's another thing that we didn't say. These are free. You don't pay for these services. So that's very different from other places. So if you're having a situation with a coworker or whatever, and both of you choose to come to mediation, then those grievances get aired out in a very, like you said, secure, supervised mediation that ends up being very effective as well. So, and then I'm also going to add that when the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression was drafting the ordinance for civilian oversight, we also included that people who had a complaint against St. Louis Police Department, an individual officer, could also use CRC instead of filing the complaint. Because oftentimes, I think, and you all would agree with me, that we found that people just wanted to know, well, why did you choose me on that day to be disrespectful? You just want to be heard and you want to answer to the question. You're not really trying to get somebody fired or whatever. You just, why did you have to cuss me out that day? I was just asking a question. So those are two things to me that really have stuck out that A, you are, be, and it's not that you are funded by the city that they have access to the services, but that is just one of the many avenues that people have inside the city government to use. They have their own thing, but this is one that doesn't require as much documentation and stress. You know, you both agree, and that, and nobody knows what happened except that you agreed to disagree, or you agreed on these particular terms. But also in terms of folks have used this around police complaints. So let's talk about like what kinds of complaints can come up through the city without mentioning names, and same thing with the police. But what have you been able to do with the process in terms of using the mediation tool as a outcome that is agreeable to both parties?
Yeah, I'd like to share an example, and I won't name any names, but this was one that happened earlier this year that the volunteers who mediated it found particularly impactful, and I think really impacted all of us as we were working on it. But there was a woman whose mother had unfortunately been killed, and I won't talk too much about the logistics of the how or the why. But her mother had been killed, and she arrives to the scene after getting a call that, the police are here at your mom's house and these things, and the police are laughing. And she learns that her mother had just been killed. And here are the police just a few feet away laughing, right? And needless to say, for anyone who's in that circumstance, that's gonna be really, that's gonna be really difficult. That's gonna hurt. You're gonna assume that they're taking it lightly. It's not serious. They don't care, right? Any number of things. And so this person filed a grievance through the Civilian Oversight Board and checked a little box saying, "I'd like to attempt mediation with the other person." So it got sent over to us. We were able to get one of the officers to sit down with the woman and just have a conversation. And what happened was, for the officer, this was another day at work. And these are his coworkers. And someone had said something funny. It wasn't related to what was going on. And they were laughing, right? I don't think anyone will argue with the fact that many officers are experienced to a great deal of trauma. And for anyone who's worked in trauma, humor is a main way that we cope with it. And so for them, that's what this was. And to hear from the woman how awful it made her feel, the officer just forgot that when responding to these calls, yes, it's work, but also it's someone's life. And so they were able to have that conversation. She was able to feel heard. The officer was able to apologize, and the officer felt that he had learned something too. And so both parties were able to have that conversation because of, because of our organization. Because the other process was, it goes to a hearing, they listen to the evidence, the woman has to, provide testimony and talk about that awful day over and over again, and then the officer's against her. For mediation, it's not like that. You're not on opposite sides. We try to help you become on the same side.
Inside.
Yeah. You want to add to that, Jesse, or even talk about what happens when people in the departments have issues, what that could look like?
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to add to that, a lot of times in mediation, an apology goes a long ways. You know, me being I do family and civil mediation, and a lot of time where there's money, and I'm talking about sometimes five, 10, 20, $50,000, an apology just to hear the other person's side and where they're coming from, and a lot of time, just hearing the words, "I'm truly sorry," can go a long ways in mending and helping people heal. And that's one of the biggest things. Another thing that you will find that's different from litigation as far as a mediation, how often do you see people in court go to the other side and on the way out apologize? I can count countless of times where at the end of a mediation, they may not agree, and they may not always come to a full solution. They may come to a partial solution, but knowing that a week or two later, when you do a follow-up, you hear that they have worked out the rest of the differences and they've apologized. Some cases they've even, became acquaintance of each other, but in a work as far as one department to another, workplace mediation. A lot of times when you work with people, you will have different conflicts. Like for instance, somebody will continue to take food out of the refrigerator or something along those lines. I mean, even those simple things can run into a conflict. So you have all of this tension in the workplace that's building up, right? And so one day it explodes. And so even as a mediator, you go in and people just working out their differences. Because what happens often a lot when you have conflict with somebody, you'll go tell five or 10 other people before you actually tell the person themselves that there is
Because
an
you
issue.
need a vent. You need a vent about how you're
Yeah,
feeling.
right. And a lot of time when you vent, and it's not that you're trying to gossip, you got to get it out, right? But you don't feel comfortable going to the actual person that you have the conflict with. And a lot of times, as a mediator, it's one or two people, but it has spread, throughout the office. And so what happens, and this is what's so good, and this is why I love CRC, and one of the things that our executive director have done, the program they put together is conflict coaching, right? It's teaching people about what do you do with those emotions, how to rephrase or how to reframe things. This is outside of that mediation scope, but having those skills and using those skills and teaching people how to use those skills, oh my God, are you talking about mending a lot of relationships? Or a lot of friendships and a lot of things. And so what that does is in the workplace, when you have all that tension, teaching people how to have and approach each other with respect, right? Being respectful, listening without judgment. Okay. So conflict coaching is about listening for understanding. A lot of time we just listen to respond, right? But in conflict coaching, they teach you to listen without judgment. And so you're learning during the process. So in a workplace situation, having those type of skills can go a long ways. And not only does it just solve that issue, it's almost like a domino effect, right? And so it kind of spreads like a wildfire. And then what you have is you have a workplace where people are working harmoniously. They know how to talk and communicate with one another. And a lot of times, it brings the mediation report down, but you have a lot of happy people going to work. And so that's what's so good about mediation.
I'm
It
glad.
seems to me that before you
Well,
say that, Wolf, because you can respond to this too, what is happening in the process is a people's self-awareness is tapped into. Because other, as you said, with the police situation, We don't know the impact that we're having on other people, whether it be a nonverbal or a verbal response. The other thing it seems to do is to tap into our empathy. Because now that we're self-aware, now we can feel empathy for that other person. So those are two things that I don't see being cultivated in this society. First of all, individualism is cultivated. Do your thing, do whatever, regardless of how it affects other people. And then the other thing is, like, you don't have to feel for other people. If they're not feeling for you, then, forget them. That is a recipe for more conflict and more stress and more anxiety and more of all the negative emotions that are going to come to the fore. So I think the examples that you all have given really do underscore that we all have to tap into our empathy, particularly in the volatile times that we were in, where people's really their first response is violence. Whether it be road rage or I'm gonna punch this tenant out. I mean, and what happens, what I've seen happen, and you all can definitely respond to this, is that people who are supposed to be giving leadership to how conflict resolves do a hands-off thing. I'm not going to get involved in that. You all need to resolve it yourself. And I'm talking about supervisors on the job. I'm talking about principals who will tell their teachers, don't bring me all that conflict. You all resolve that in your classroom. Well, what if you don't have the tools to do that? So you're left almost like defenseless with all the conflict brewing around you. And that just makes for more stress. So talk a little bit about what it means for people to have those tools in spite of a environment where people don't even want to resolve it and don't want to deal with conflict. They think that it's flight instead of fight or fight instead of flight, and they just like absolve themselves of any responsibility.
Yeah, I think I'm so glad both of you talked about kind of like the venting process and conflict coaching. And I like to think about whenever you talk about conflict with a friend, they always take your side. Well, it depends on the friend, right? But they always take your side and they're like, oh yeah, the other person's so wrong. They're so stupid and you're so right, and they like hype you up. They make it worse, right? And what we do is the opposite of that. So we're not trying to say, oh, you did something wrong or you need to take accountability, but what led to this, right? And those types of questions lead to more calming rather than hyping people up. And one of the things that we've heard to answer your question, Jamala, a lot of young people right now are coming to us saying, talking about this stuff, mediation, that stuff's soft. And I'm not soft. And we've heard that so much, right? The semester just started up again pretty recently. So we're back in schools training young people. And a lot of folks have said, they're like, oh, I'm not soft. Mediation, I don't need that, right? I don't, we sol we solve our fight, we solve our conflicts by fighting, right? And I think echoing back to something we talked about earlier, social media has gone a long way in glorifying that violent response. But if you think about when you are the most happy with other people, is it when you're fighting other people or is it when you're having a good time with them? Like when you're hanging out, when you're calm, when you're comfortable, or like is fighting all you know? And folks may have different responses to that, right? But I think if we think more, if we want to think about the violence we see in our society and solutions to it, collective community care is the opposite of violence. If we take care of ourselves and we take care of each other, then we don't have to express ourselves using our fists, using our weapons, right? We're able to be more honest with each other. And I don't, maybe I'm a soft person. I'll own it, right? Maybe I am a soft person, but I think there's a, I think it takes a lot of courage. I think it takes a lot of strength. I think people get confused and they say, oh, well, it's soft. And I actually think people are just afraid. And soft is a way to say, oh, well, I'm not afraid. And it's like, it's okay to be afraid. Everyone I know is afraid of conflict.
Right. Especially if you don't know how to deal with it. It just like causes more stress and strain. Yeah, I'm thinking about particularly with young people. I remember doing mediation trainings with train the trainers, where you had peer mediator, And we got that about, I don't want anybody thinking I'm soft. But so what we tended to do was to make sure we had the negative leaders trained. And when I say negative leaders, I'm talking about not the folks who got the GPAs, top GPAs or whatever, but the
Right.
ones who
High risk.
have, yeah, the high
Yeah.
risk folks who
Yeah.
people respected just because
Yeah.
they were tough, and getting them trained so that you see that, Ray Ray is a peer mediator, so it must be okay. And Ray Ray will say, hey, you need to chill out, go to mediation, or do a mediation right there on the spot to say, hey, what's going on? So I think when young people do it, it's just, as you said, Wolf, it's a ripple effect, because now you got a classroom who understands the power of mediation and know who to go to or whatever. But it just seems like it's so much a part of our lives, and when we don't deal with it and it's unresolved, it just compounds and just makes it more stressful for everybody. So I think, for example, you talked about now the school is in session, and what you've been doing with the peer mediators and the
Yeah.
students. Talk a little bit about that, and maybe even what schools you're in, so that parents who are listening could say, oh, I didn't even know that was in my school, and they can reinforce some of that at home. Because one thing for sure, when young people learn a skill or some information, they take it back home. That's whether it is we need to stop eating meat, mom, or now we need to recycle. They have some influence on what goes on in their household. So if they say, hey, we need a mediation here, or I don't think you're listening, mom, to what, Johnny is saying, parents take note of that. So let's talk about like the power of like peer mediation and the power of young people.
So we are currently in four schools, and I knew that you might ask me a question that I don't have a ready answer to, and it might be this one. But I believe we're in McKinley, one of the Central and Visual Performing Arts Academy.
Okay.
We're in
Are we still in Florence, Ferguson?
so Actually, I can announce. I'll announce that in one second.
Okay.
That'll be the next. That'll be the last.
Okay.
We're in four schools in St. Louis City, and for the schools that we're in, we announced to the whole school about the program. So if there's any young people who are listening from the St. Louis City Public Schools, you all probably know better than I do which schools we're in. But then we also do a training in the St. Louis City Public Library. So we do that once a year. In the evening, during summer, and we train folks no matter what school they're from. So, and you're right, the ripple effect is critical. And when we're talking about what makes a good peer mediator, it's a conversation we have a lot with the schools, because the instinct, as you noted, is, well, we're just going to pick the students with the highest GPA and the most involved. And then folks come to us and they're like, well, is that really what you want? And we're like, actually, no. We want the people who have clout, and we won't define, we can't say what that looks like for your school, but that's why for us, we call it student-led peer mediation, because we're not the ones making those decisions. We're turning those back to the students, and we're like, hey, are the folks in this room the right folks to be in this room? Are the people who are leaders in your school the people who are part of this program? And if the answer is no, how do we get them in? And how do we advocate for them to stay in? We've had plenty of times when some students have been subject to expulsion hearings,
Nope.
and we've been able to advocate as part of our program to for them to stay in the school, continue learning, and to grow through that. And I'm very excited to announce, and we're officially able to announce this today, but we've received funding from the St. Louis County Children's Service Fund to expand our peer mediation program into St. Louis County.
That's
So
awesome.
we're currently working with, we're finalizing partnership deals with two different school districts, and I don't want to announce it too soon, and in case they're like, oh, well, the contract's not signed, and but we're very excited for that. And then we're partnering with the St. Louis County Public Library to do another training, just like in the city, but for folks who are in St. Louis County, And we had our most recent one at the, I believe, Natural Bridge branch. So we're in particular looking for communities that are experiencing lots of conflict, but maybe don't have programming within their schools on how to resolve it already. So yeah, so that's a little bit about the program. And I can say that if you've ever talked to someone who was a peer mediator in high school, they will tell you. One of our staff was a peer mediator. We've had someone on one of our advisory committees who was a peer mediator, and the impact it has had on their life is just it's just incredible to see.
Jesse, you want to add to that? Because you actually do some of this
I do,
mediation
and
stuff.
that yeah. Matter of fact, the Ferguson Florence School District, myself and an employee, Kristen Watts, who was a part of CRC at one time, we went to Florence Ferguson and we taught the peer mediation program. And what we ended up doing was actually taking a team of young mediators to compete at a national level from those schools. I believe they went to Iowa, and we've had a few of the students first time around after learning what mediation was come in second and fourth place. I am an advocate for the peer mediation program. So when you talk about, we always, that old song, the, children are the future, teach them well and let them lead the way. There is some truth to that, right? So if you want to produce better citizens, you have to start at a very young age, right? I've been working with peer mediation programs, not just here in Missouri, other states, and even a few countries, as far as teaching emotional regulation, conflict resolution, those feelings and those emotions when it comes to being rejected, right? When you, what do you do when you have a conflict? How do you act? What do how do you feel? Is it okay for me to have those feelings? So if you teach that at a younger age, look at how that would impact moving forward. We end friendships, right? A lot of time people get divorced, right? All because the lack of communication, the lack of understanding. And so the thought is if you teach that at a younger age, right? Because conflict is inevitable. Work, school, home, regardless of who you are, how much money you have, it doesn't matter, right? Conflict is everywhere. But it's how you respond to the conflict is what makes all of the difference. And so our thought and vision, part of the thing at CRC is if you start teaching young, you could alleviate a lot of issues, a lot of bullying, a lot of youth violence. I'm working with a program in Florida where prison the pipeline, right, situation. But it comes from understanding, it comes from educating. And with those students in the Florence Ferguson school district, some of the parents even got involved, understanding. And that's one of the things, with the peer mediation program is you can teach to children, but what happens with our children, right? In this environment, we're not their guardian, we're not their aunt, uncle. So they're gonna go back to that environment. The future is hopefully in the future we can get the funding. Open it up to the parents, to the family, right? And so that way they continue to grow because it's about the mindset. You got to change the mindset when it comes to conflict. Conflict is okay. It's okay. That's how you learn, that's how you grow, but it's how you initially handle, the conflict. So starting out with your young people, the young adults, and Wolf was right when it comes to leadership. A lot of times you go to the school. The schools want to give them the gifted and talented student, which is fine, and that's all great. I want that student that that's almost expelled, right? That's in alternative school, right? People will listen to that alternative student, and once you convince them that this is the proper way, their leadership grows. Their grades tend to grow, right? They tend to get less. There's data out there to support the Florence Ferguson School District and the school district we've been in, where the referrals to the principal, the office, the school counselor, they reduce. Okay, and it all comes from teaching conflict resolution, teaching how to have those difficult conversations. And that's what we are all about at CRC.
So let me just zero in on this student thing, because one of the things I've found, and this was back in the 90s when we were doing this, when there was gangs, when there was, and all of these things that were happening, and there was money abounding to do these mediations because they wanted those fights to stop, they wanted the territorial stops. But then when the numbers started going down, folks said, okay, we solved that problem now. How are you all doing with the funding for those particular programs, which are oftentimes influenced by, outside, funding sources? Like if you got priorities for this, that, and the other, peer mediation sometimes gets pushed down to the bottom. Like we're okay now. Our numbers of incidents have reduced, our suspensions have reduced. We're okay. But what they don't understand, you have to have a continuous program. And Jesse, you spoke to that, where every year new classes are and new students are being part of the training. So at a certain point, you have a critical mass, kind of like the herd concept with vaccination. You can't just do a school, a classroom of all the gifted students. You got to keep going, and even doing peer mediations with the janitors, the support staff, the administrator, all
Yes.
of that. So how is that working now with people understanding the concept of really the perpetual concept of mediation
Yeah.
and the funding that goes with it?
Yeah.
Well.
The funding piece, I'll try my best. One thing that I learned from someone who'd worked in education for 30 years is this concept of in education, there's always a golden apple. And folks are always chasing this ideal intervention, and in that there's this idea that once we do it, it's done. And I think for most folks, we know that if we go to the doctor one time, we're not healthy for the rest of our lives, right? Like we have to go back, we have to do those checkups. It's just part of life, right? I think as trends come and go, you're right, funding tends to follow it. One of the things that we've found is by being an agency that is not a school, but working with the schools, we are able to continually advocate for the program in a way that schools have so many different pressures on them. And right now, I can't imagine being a school, being, in a school setting or school administration. The battleground that people have made of it is incredible. The advantage we have, though, as an outside agency, we're the ones who can be like, no, this is important. We can be the ones that are getting the funds to do the trainings. And for the schools, we actually provide them with a budget in order to cover the costs for students to create materials. So the students buy hoodies, for example, with the logo, and they get to wear the hoodies at schools, and the schools will create like a uniform exception for them. They'll be like, you know what, we want fidgets, and that's really what we want to emphasize, and we'll get some branded fidgets. Great. So the students help lead that conversation about like, how do we want to spread the message? How do we want this to feel ongoing without the school having to spend really that much time or energy other than allowing us that space, helping us connect with those students, and empowering those students to use the skills that they've learned.
Good, good. Because I think funding is always a necessary evil, and if you don't have the money to provide the support staff, you're not going to have a program. Let's talk about how people can get involved. Okay, you can be a person who accessed the services because you're a plaintiff or you got a complaint. But what about folks who just want to support what you're doing? You have a volunteer like program where people can do various things to support. Let's talk about that, and then I'd like for you to talk about what's coming up tomorrow, because we want to definitely get that on people's calendars.
For sure. Yeah, so we have a very we have a lot of volunteers. All of our community work, those neighbor to neighbor mediations, police civilian conversations, those are all led and by volunteers. So members of the St. Louis community who are passionate about resolving conflict peacefully, and we believe that that is critical to what makes those successful. Of course, all of the staff are really passionate, but there's something different knowing that someone is so passionate that they're giving their time, they're giving their energy, and they're doing so without compensation because they care about you, because they care about this conflict, because they want to help. right? So our mediators are so important to every service that we provide. In order to sign up to become or join our volunteer list, it's on our website. So our website is crcstl.org. And then folks can just click around in there. We train our volunteers on how to do mediations as well as on how to become a what's called a conflict coach. So that's that one-on-one conversation we talked about. But volunteers help out in other ways. Our volunteers help out with our student-led peer mediation program, especially whenever it's held at a library. A lot of times, volunteers are really helpful in those settings. Volunteers help us go out into the community. Volunteers help us fundraise because, like you said, a necessary evil means if the work's going to move forward, someone's got to be paid. As much as I wish that weren't necessary, we've got to eat too, right? So there's a lot of different ways for folks to get involved, and it's all done. The easiest and fastest way is to just go to our website, which is again crcstl.org. Is it okay if I make the plug for the event?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Great. So, and for folks who are curious about us, about the work we do, maybe you are thinking about volunteering, but you don't know, or thinking about maybe I want to give to this cause, but I don't know. We have our annual Peace in the Loo happy hour tomorrow from 4 to 7 p.m. It is in Benton Park. And if you go to our website, the flyer is front and center. We do ask that folks RSVP. It's completely free. There's a variety of beverages, including adult and soft beverages, and then food. Some snacks will be provided as well. So at the event, I almost forgot to mention this, but we are awarding two awards this year. So the first one is the John Doggett Mediator of the Year Award, which goes to a volunteer mediator within the St. Louis community who goes above and beyond in supporting St. Louisans with conflict. And our winner this year is Lee Walter. She's been a volunteer with us for 3 or 4 years now, and
Yes.
Incredibly involved, runs our reflective practice circles, and has mediated with us as a volunteer, I want to say somewhere around 30 cases. So a lot of work with us, a lot of work with St. Louis community. And then we have a brand new award this year, which is our Mary Wheeler Peace Builder of the Year Award. And that award is going to none other than Dr. LJ Punch. And I know that most listeners are probably familiar with Dr. Punch and the absolutely incredible work that he has done to address and respond to gun violence in St. Louis. And I can't think of a better person who embodies what it means to be a peace builder in the St. Louis community. So we're so excited to honor both of them. And the awards will be presented at 5:30 p.m. for anyone who
Yeah.
especially wants to be there for that.
And that's very exciting. And so if people can go, it's free. You get a chance to see all the players, well, not all, but some of the players who are making this happen. But you know, it makes me think though, for the kind of society that we're living in now that is being stoked by intentional violence. Jesse, how important is it for us to really change the culture of not in this, and I don't want people to think that you should avoid conflict because avoidance means unresolved, but to lean into it. And I think about like how the current administration has named the Department of Defense to the Department of War, which, you know, takes it to a whole nother level. And I remember this is some presidents back, they were actually thinking about calling it the Department of Peace. And so words are very important. And
Words
so
are important.
for so how can we as just regular citizens really start to change the culture of peace and peacefulness without having such a negative vibe about conflict? Because I think both of you all talked about conflict is inevitable and it doesn't always have to be negative. So how do we get people lean into finding more peaceful solutions? How does that look like for the language we use, for the way we operate in the spaces that we are?
Yeah.
What could that look like, Jesse?
Well, I could tell you this. I know one of the biggest important things is being mindful and being compassionate, and being respectful, regardless of our color, religion, any of those things. Really, that is extremely important. And just know that it's okay for people to have different opinions than yours, you know. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings. You know, we're all have our imperfections, and it really comes down to you know, really to love and respect each other's right. So when you talk about words being extremely important, you know, you're talking about those stereotypes, those assumptions and perceptions, and those type of things. And the way that you clear those things up is through education. Is it, you know, you have to educate. We have what you call unconscious bias, right? We all have it. And it's that unconscious bias. It's understanding your unconscious bias. And that's that part in you that you don't know that you're doing it, you know, but you're doing it. And the way that you correct it is through education, is through take the time to learn about somebody else than yourself, right? You want in the world that we live in, and how to correct this is you want to care about somebody that's not you, that doesn't look like you, that may live 1,000 miles away, but you need to care about, are they eating? Are they sleeping? You know, these political lines, this division, the separation that we have, when COVID came through, did it matter? You know, when the measles took place many years ago, does it matter? Does it matter when a person have cancer? Do color matter? Do all of those things matter? And the answer is no. You know, we have to look at each other person, and you have to really care about each other, you know, when it really comes to it. So when all these, you know, I could tell you for myself, I kind of stopped watching news because it's so depressing. It's so depressed. It is. It's just. It takes a toll on you, on your psyche, and you get in this you know, in this environment, and you start thinking about all these what ifs and stuff. But when it really comes down to it, it's just being mindful, being kind and considerate, understanding you know, yourself, your capabilities, your limitations, your triggers, and then understanding other people's, and just sit down having a simple conversation, you know, about it. But you know, when you talk about the, you know, wanting to change the name to the Department of War and stuff like that, and it's kind of strange because myself, my background, I'm 20 plus years military infantry soldier, but I'm in the conflict resolution field, and I will tell you know, I love it. I think this is the best field, you know, to be in. It's about teaching and spreading openness, right? It's okay. You want a safe place to have those discussions, and that's just what needs to happen. We're all the same, just different
So
beliefs.
it's interesting that you talk about the military background, because then there's always an adversary. For you,
Yeah.
Wolf, you do have a degree in law, and so that also points to it always has to be an adversary.
Right.
So this is what I'm talking about, like the way the society is structured is us versus them, me versus
Right.
you. And so Wolf, what kind of adjustment did you have to make to say, here's the plaintiff, here somebody's got to win, to now we're talking about mediation, where there could be win-win for two people regardless of what the initial conflict was.
Yeah. So I do have my law degree, but I also have my MSW degree. And so when I was going to, I like to say that I play a lawyer on television more than in real life. Like, you know, I'm not like arguing in front of judges. I talk to judges and they respect me because of my, you know, degree. But other than that, So I always knew that there was more than an adversarial approach. And I've been in mediation since I graduated from law school. The moment I became an attorney, I went into the field of mediation. Because lawyers are trained to view everyone as an adversary, including our peers. We are graded against each other. And in law school, I was like, this is not right. This is not how things should be. So the field of mediation felt really natural for me, but it was, like you said, it's really, really difficult, especially when you're in conflict, to view the other person as a person.
I think that's really, in the few minutes that we have left, to really get people to understand, A, conflict is inevitable and necessary, but it doesn't always have to be negative. And the kind of society that we live in pushes us in the direction that everybody is an adversary. So this has to be resistance on our end. And as both of you all have mentioned, that comes with education, the how to or the what if this happens, how do I respond? Even if it didn't happen to you, like what would I do in that situation? And if you go to social media, you're going to get lots of examples of how people did conflict not good, not good, whether you were standing in the line with, doing groceries, whether you're on the airplane, people are not dealing with conflict well, and it's not healthy. So let's see if we can get people to the event tomorrow. The website is crcstlouis.com, and you get the pop-up of the event, so you don't even have to really go anywhere, but find out more about how you can be more grounded in the kind of society that we are living in, because it is not healthy for us. And I'm with you, Jesse. I have not turned it completely off, but I have like modulated my going to like finding out about all the horrible things in the world, and it has made me more healthy in my outlook. So I want to just thank you, Wolf and Jesse DeGraff for Reed and Wolf
You're so
Smith,
welcome.
the Conflict Resolution Center of St. Louis, sharing with us all the wonderful things that you all are doing.
Thank you, Jamala.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I would say, coming up is No Kings, October 18th. Find one in this place near you, because we don't need what we got going on now in the administration. If anything, go to JamalaRogers.com, including you'll see this one up. And now that we're doing visuals, you can go to YouTube, Jamala Rogers YouTube Spaces. So thank you for listening, and I hope you
right now. We don't need